an update for you over at the Civic Center, and I'll go to him live now.
Thank you, James. Good morning. This is Dave Hammack at the Valdez Civic Center Ballroom in Valdez, Alaska. We are standing by for the start of the Exxon morning briefing. We're expecting Don Cornett, the Exxon Anchorage office head, who has been the primary spokesman in the last couple of days, arriving here to back up Frank Arosti, the president of Exxon Shipping, who arrived the first day of the spill. We are now in day seven. This is 7 days ago. The Exxon Valdez ran aground. Also yesterday, Bill Stevens, who's the president of Exxon USA, the president of the mother company, was here at the evening press conference. We don't know if he's still in town and have no idea if he'll be here at the press briefing. Generally, the Exxon folks have tried to bring in people to respond to specific questions that have been raised in the previous press conference by the press, so we'll see who all shows up today. I think James has mentioned the schedule. Here at the Civic Center, we do have a projection for tomorrow as well. For today, there are only three press briefings scheduled at this time, an 11 o'clock briefing by Exxon, the 5 o'clock evening briefing, which usually is considerably later than 5 o'clock, and then at 8 p.m. tonight, NOAA has scheduled a briefing. Everyone has kind of been waiting for the NOAA briefing, assuming that that will be the most thorough analysis of marine impact and environmental impact that we will have had to date. Tomorrow, Friday the 31st, we anticipate a National Transportation Safety Board briefing at 10 a.m. It was at that briefing yesterday by the NTSB that it was revealed that the Coast Guard warrant officer, Dozier, who was the first Coast Guard officer on the scene at about 2 a.m., detected the smell of alcohol in the captain's breath. And some other revelations were made regarding orders given to the helmsman, and a discussion was made about what the fact that the public hearing that is scheduled for Anchorage will be delayed. We again have scheduled an NTSB Safety Board press conference tomorrow, Friday the 31st at 10 a.m. That'll be followed at 11 by the Exxon morning briefing, and on Friday the only other thing scheduled is the evening Exxon briefing. So for today, Exxon at 11, Exxon at 5, and NOAA tonight at last at about 8 o'clock this evening. And tomorrow we expect the NTSB and two Exxon briefings. I don't know if we've mentioned over the air, the Coast Guard has finally given up attempting to hold regularly scheduled press conferences. Most of those that had been scheduled were either canceled or delayed. They finally have announced there will be no more Coast Guard regular briefings, but if there is a special announcement, they'll make an arrangement for a conference and try to get notice out. Any meetings that are held here in the Valdez Civic Center, we will broadcast and feed statewide to those stations down the line who wish to carry them. If there are broadcasts or announcements, pardon, if there are announcements or conferences held elsewhere in the community or in Cordova, we will do our level best to get them on the air. And in any case, we'll try to make sure that we have a reporter there to cover the events and make sure that the content of the announcements at least is made available. Again, we're standing by for Exxon. No sign of Don Cornett, the spokesman we anticipate as of yet. We'll let you know as soon as they're here. We do have a growing array of media. It's now up to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 cameras on tripods, up from 7 on Sunday and Monday. And there's still a couple of others that float around on shoulders. Those are TV cameras, a huge arc of portable cameras on tripods around the front of the Valdez Civic Center Ballroom. Also, the last few days, we've had remarkable weather, absolutely clear skies. Today, the skies over Valdez are overcast. However, the white caps on Port Valdez on the water are gone. The water is almost glassy smooth within the port, which bodes well for water conditions out on Prince William Sound for those who are working in small boats attempting to set booms and operate skimmers. We'll have forecasts available at the conclusion of this conference at about 12 noon, and we will tack those on to the end of this feed down the line, so if those who are interested can find out what the forecasts are, marine forecasts for the waters of Prince William Sound and Valdez Arm. The Exxon Valdez is aground at the junction of Valdez Arm with Prince William Sound. The small boats moving booms and working to skim up the oil and work on the beaches are down on the southwest end of Prince William Sound, and sort of in the middle of a triangle bounded, or four-sided figure bounded by Cordova, Valdez, Whittier, and almost approaching the area of Seward. This is Dave Hammack at the Civic Center Ballroom. I'm going to hand back to James Winchester at the KCHU studios. We'll resume broadcasting from the ballroom here at the Valdez Civic Center as soon as the Exxon press conference gets underway. Again, it's scheduled to start at 11. It's already about 5 minutes late, but that's not an uncommon occurrence as this process of the oil spill and its aftermath continues. I'm Dave Hammack. Back to you, James. Thank you, James. We have noted the arrival now of Don Cornett, the Exxon executive from Anchorage, who has been conducting these morning briefings to allow Frank Arossi time to work in the Emergency Operations Center. With him today is George Nelson, the president of Alyeska. George Nelson was in attendance at the town meeting in Cordova, but it's the first time he's appeared at these press conferences. Here's Don Cornett.
If they would consider setting their cameras up on one side so that the audience could see what was going on. I'm passing that on. That's not my suggestion. That's your job. So I'm getting a lot of... Okay.
The meeting starting off with the logistics request that the cameraman allow a setup so that, again, there are like 12 cameras in an arc across the front of the room, behind which is the audience. Here's Don Cornett introducing George Nelson, the president of Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, again, who is here for the first time at these briefings in the Valdez Civic Center Ballroom.
Answer your questions. Mr. Chuck O'Donnell is back with us. And I will give you what was just handed to me as the latest information on the oil spill and the cleanup operations. The lightering operation continues to go extremely well. 475,000 barrels have been transferred from the Exxon Valdez to the Exxon Baton Rouge to complete transfer to this ship. The Baton Rouge has sailed away. This represents nearly half of the total oil that was on board. A sister ship to the Baton Rouge, the Exxon San Francisco, is in the process of pulling alongside the Exxon Valdez and is almost tied up. It is expected to take 2 days to complete the transfer of 475,000 barrels to the San Francisco. This operation is expected to be complete by Saturday morning. On Sunday, the Exxon Baytown, a smaller vessel, will be utilized to complete the lightering process. The transfer pumping rate is expected to average 10,000 barrels per hour. Booming and skimming activities are continuing to be expanded. A total of 70,800 feet of boom is currently in the water or ready for deployment on ships. Of this amount, 42,000 feet is protective boom, 33,000 feet is sorbent boom, which absorbs the oil. 2,400 feet is the fire boom. Examination of the spill and concentrations of oil will determine where these booms will be deployed. These areas are changing as the spill evolves. Booms are in place at Main Bay and Ashami Bay, and boom is in place around Evans Island.
Which island?
Evans.
Around it, whole island.
Let me see if somebody can verify it.
No, not encircling, but around, meaning at different locations on Evans Island.
Did you hear that answer?
Yeah.
The total number of skimmers currently in use is still 10 to 12. Two large Navy skimmers are still planned to be deployed at key locations. No dispersants were applied yesterday, and current spill conditions do not suggest that they will be utilized in the future. Attempts to burn at Eleanor Island recently were unsuccessful. The oil was too heavily emulsified to ignite. Today, we will be examining additional burning operations. We're studying the areas around Sphinx and Ingot Islands. Tidal zone cleanup is expected to focus on Naked, Eleanor, Ingot, Knight, and Bly Islands. Efforts now are directed toward additional skimming in these areas prior to beginning the physical cleanup activities. The Spill Operating Committee, which is comprised of Exxon, government, and community representatives, will establish plans to coordinate beach cleanup. A special subcommittee will be set up to conduct this operation. A coordinated survey effort between aircraft and surface vessels is expected to be conducted today for birds and mammals. And Alice Bertner of the Cleanup Center stated that there is a possibility that birds could be brought in for cleaning by the end of today. The first mammal survey was recently conducted by Dr. Randall Davis, and no oiled mammals were found. Two survey boats are expected to be dispatched this afternoon. We have a claims office operational in Valdez, and we'll be opening one in Cordova as soon as possible. We're still trying to get office space. Claims should be submitted to one of these offices. There was some possible misunderstanding yesterday regarding our claims number. The Valdez number is 835-5406. That's the situation as I understand it. We will have another press conference this evening. Mr. Iarossi will have additional information, and Mr. Bill Stevens, the president of Exxon USA, will be back this evening. Yes, sir.
Has everything come together now? We still hear complaints by workers that they are not getting jobs. How is that?
It's coming together. Before I came to this meeting, I met with the local union representatives and with the manager from Norcon, which is a union contractor, and we were discussing problems such as housing and how the jobs will be divided up, and the fact that there are a lot of people who have come into town to get jobs. We're attempting to put the local people to work as fast as we can, and we have a lot of people in town looking for work, but we still have more people signed up than we can actually physically put out there. I asked the question, when do you think the employment buildup will peak? And the answer that I got from the manager, the contractor manager, was he thought it would probably peak in about 2 to 3 weeks. So it is not all together. It's going to grow as the spill is better defined, and we're able to put people in places where they can attack the oil.
What about the fishermen who want to go out and work on the rocks and the beaches? How is that?
They will be utilized in that same buildup. We have a lot of fishermen out there working right now. I had a new count on the boats. I gave you a count last night. There's 40-some boats that are working out there right now. I didn't have that in my statement, but
you talked about a couple of staging areas with motherships. Where are those areas? Do they exist yet? Last night, Mr. Iarossi talked about two staging areas with two motherships, cluster of ships around them, working. Where are those flotillas located?
I really don't know what he meant by motherships. Maybe there's somebody that...
That kind of thing for the crews that are working the boats. A place for them to come and refresh themselves and go back out.
We have, as I remember from last night, about 8 ships transferring people back and forth. I will have to look into that and give you an answer this evening. I'm not familiar enough to speculate. I'm sure he's probably talking about something like the Glacier Queen or something that they can get meals on. One of the other problems we're having when we put people out there to work is getting food to them. We have had some people that have stayed out there a long time and waited for food. We're trying to attack that problem right now, too.
Mr. Cornett?
Yes, gentlemen.
You said no oiled mammals were found. What do you mean by that?
That's the report that we got from Dr. Davis, who's running.
No mammals were seen anywhere? Or no oiled mammals had washed up dead on the beach? What does that mean?
Two survey boats. Wait a minute. The first mammal survey was recently conducted by Dr. Randall Davis, and no oiled mammals were found. I am assuming that that means live or dead oiled mammals.
That means there's no mammals dollars.
It means just what it says. He didn't find any.
What about the report?
That's not what he said last night at a technical meeting. So I'm curious as to the accuracy of that information.
Well, I will go back and double check it for you. It's the best information that I have.
We have a report from John Lyman over at the Department of Fish and Game that 15,000 birds are now dead or will die as a result of the spill. Do you have any information on that?
I have absolutely no information. The information I have is directly contrary to that, but if that's true, I'm sure I will know it by the end of the day. But
Yesterday at the morning news conference, you said that 5,000 to 6,000 barrels of oil have been cleaned up. What's the what's the result today? You didn't give that figure.
I don't have that figure today.
Get that again?
I'll get, as soon as I get one of those figures, I'll pass it on to you. I did not get a figure like that today.
Could I ask just a follow-up, sir?
Do you have an estimate at this point of how much oil you think is evaporated? This is not the case, considering that only about 6,000 barrels approximately have been skimmed up, that really Mother Nature is what you're arguing is your best chance for getting rid of most of this oil.
I heard Mr. Iorossi give a figure last night. I meant to ask him where the figure came from and what it was based upon. I have not had a chance to do that. We have been working union problems and all other kinds of problems since then. I have your problem, your question in mind. I will get an answer for you in the back.
Mr. Cornett, I came to a press conference Monday evening in which you stated that Exxon was doing everything they could to get this thing done. And the leading question in today's press conference is in regard to the job. You gave an evasive answer in which you were trying to win the locals over by saying you give locals the job. But I'm a resident of Alaska, and this isn't Exxon's environment you're talking about. This is the environment of Alaskans, okay? And I'm an Alaskan, and I want to help clean this up. You're not hiring. You have hired four people for 2 days temporary out of labor's hall as of 10 o'clock today, and at job service, you haven't hired a single person. There's a sign posted saying you're not going to hire anybody today. Do you have any response to what you're saying you're doing and what's actually occurring?
Well, I know what the union leaders told me that I met with a while ago, and the contractor who is in charge of the hiring, that's the information that I have, and that's what I based my statement on.
I would like a clarification. On two occasions, you have said, look at our record. In 12 years, this is the first spill. I realize you should qualify that. You probably meant this is the first major spill of this magnitude. Last night, Mr. Stevens defended the shipping of Trudeau Bay crude by saying that they had a good record, only 5,000 barrels have been spilled. Now, he said this in the context of the safety record of shipping of Prudhoe Bay crude. Now, I've done a little bit of research here, and I assumed that what he meant, only 5,000 barrels have been spilled in Port Valdez. I haven't been able to document all of these figures, but I can give you an idea of what I found. BP Ohio's records record 431 spills, most of them minor, in Port Valdez. We know that the Thompson Pass spilled 1,700 barrels, and that the Cold Leader spilled 55 barrels. So there's 1,755 barrels. Now, if he was talking about the total route, I did a little bit of research here in terms just from 1985 to 1989, and this is not complete, but I'd like to give you the results of my survey. Arco Anchorage, 1985, 5,690 barrels. Stuyvesant, 1986, 23,809 barrels spilled. Stuyvesant, 1987, 14,286 barrels spilled. Glacier Bay, 1987, 2,096 barrels spilled. Exxon Houston, 1989, 547 barrels spilled. This accounts just from 1985 to the present, 47,308 barrels spilled. That's about 2 million gallons. Now that's
all North Slope. That's all Alaskan crude, North Slope crude.
That's all. This is crude that's been shipped from this terminal, and this is not complete by any means. This is just a cursory survey. I do not think that's a good record. If he was indicating that 5,000 barrels are spilled here in the port, I just wanted to give people an idea of how much oil that is.
Yes.
In a very limited area here, you're talking about just this area here, that's over the whole period, that's as much as your skimmers have picked up in 5 days of operation. That's a lot of oil.
Someone else came up last night and said they thought that number was wrong. We are going back and trying to get a definite number, which we'll try to give you this evening. But it's, you compare, I appreciate that. And I think the number that we used for the amount of oil that's been transported out of here was something like 6.6 billion barrels. So about 47,000 barrels is a lot of oil. It's it's parts per million. It's not like you're spilling half of what you're hauling.
Mr. Cornett, I actually had a follow-up question, which...
Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
What I was getting at was there are some state officials that are complaining that they don't believe that it's realistic that you're really going to pick up much more oil at all, that it's just impossible. Does Exxon really expect that they're going to be able to clean up a major amount of oil that's still left out there? They certainly haven't picked up very much so far.
We're going to pick up one way or another all the oil that's out there. You see the photographs that were on the television this morning. There are streams of oil in some bays are completely full. The oil ran completely past some bays, but along the edges of the channels, the oil extends very heavy out into the channel. All that oil is skimmable when we can get the skimmers into it. It'll take a while, but if we don't get it with the skimmer, we'll get it off the ground. We're not going to walk off the Coast Guard and the state, and are not going to allow us to walk off and leave any oil anywhere. So we'll get it off.
No matter how long it takes, are you saying you'll clean up every bit of oil that's out there?
That's been our pledge from before the time this spill occurred.
Well, Mr. Cornett, is that it gets flushed out into the Gulf of Alaska and gets churned up out there. How much of the slick do you hope that happens to?
What I hope is irrelevant. But
if, what
is that sign? I think we hope to leave Prince William Sound the way we found it.
What about the possibility of that oil, once it gets out in the Gulf, somehow being driven by a westerly or a southerly, impacting on other areas other than Prince William Sound?
If we can't find it, we can't pick it up. But if we can find it, we will clean it up.
What about asphalt on the beachheads? The report that once it gets to that consistency, it's damn near impossible to hose that off rocks and beach.
No, if it gets like that, you can pick it up with your pitchfork. You can get it in some, there is some mechanism for picking it up in whatever form it is. I prefer it thick and gooey, because then it's very easy to pick up and put in a bag or a can and get rid of. It's really hard on the rocky surfaces where it splashes up as the tide comes in and you get painting of oil on rocks. That, from my experience, is the toughest part. If you put it on sand and it's thick and gooey, it's a piece of cake.
Mr. Cornett, I have a distinct feeling.
One second, I'll take you next.
I have a distinct feeling that the ineffectiveness is somehow deliberate. Can you help me? Because the oil price went down 90 cents when the Valdez Harbor was opened again. Consider to the millions of barrels you are selling every day. Quite a nice cash.
I can't express how strongly I disagree with that. I'll do my best. Let me catch my breath. You can't be serious. You just can't be serious.
I understand that for a situation like this, you deploy boom guns to chase birds away. Are those is that equipment being in place at this time?
I have no knowledge of any.
Could you find that out? Makers.
I will ask that question.
Maybe you can answer first for me about container shipping in general. If a ship's captain can bring his cargo into port early, he can get it there before it's scheduled to be there. Is there any sort of financial incentive for that?
The transport of oil by tanker is a very tightly scheduled thing. I'm not an expert in that area, but I know that one of the things you always attempt to do because of the cost of operating a tanker is have it arrive on the dot and leave as soon as it can. If you end up lying in the berth for extra time, it is very expensive. There is no premium for early arrival. This gentleman right here.
If there's no premium for early arrival, would there be then a disincentive to get there late? I mean, if the captain
Is the captain in trouble? Is he gonna lose money if he gets there late?
The objective is to get there on time.
And
if you get there late, you cause the person that's gonna come in behind you to have to discharge late.
Exactly, and it's the captain's responsibility to be there on time. That's his
job. That is correct.
And if he does not do that for some reason, if he's late for any reason, what happens?
If he is late for a reason, I think that kind of answers itself. There's some reason that he's late. It is an objective to get there on time. There is not a punishment that goes with being there late. If you have to slow down and get there late in order to be safe, that's acceptable. This gentleman in the blue shirt right here.
What's going to happen with the ship eventually? Are you trying to get it out of there, or what is going to happen with the ship itself? Not after the oil is gone, not after the oil spill, but what is going to happen with the ship itself?
The ship, as soon as all the oil is taken off of it, will go through a very ticklish process of refloating. We'll seal the deck so that the deck will contain pressure, give us buoyancy, and we will lift the ship off with buoyancy off the pinnacle of Bly Reef. I don't know how long it will take, but we will begin attempting that or preparing for that operation. And it is a very serious operation. We're working very hard to get ready for that right now, and we'll start that after all the oil is off. It will be Sunday, I would think.
After you get it off the rock, what direction is that ship going to head?
I don't have that information, but that's a good question. Yes, sir.
If I can touch briefly back again on the information gap issue. Mr. Iorossi Friday night, and I realize this was very early in the proceedings, talked about bringing in a number of different aircraft with dispersant, jets flying in from London, a 707 from London, a C-130 from Florida, a C-130 from Houston, a 747 shuttle from Houston, a plane from Seattle with tremendous amounts of boom. Saturday, he reiterated that there were at least six aircraft en route with different types of equipment. How many of those aircraft eventually ended up here in Valdez? And was there, because of that, any sort of misstatement on that issue, or was it based on any real sense of what was going on at that time?
Yes, it was based on a very good feel for what was going on. A lot of the planes turned out to be too large to land at Valdez. A lot of them landed to Anchorage, and the material from those airplanes was trucked down here. As I said last night, when we are trying to communicate with you exactly what's going on here, we have two options. We can be very precise, or we can be timely. We have opted to be timely with you, and we lose some precision. There is no intent to ever tell you anything that isn't exactly the way we understand it. And if it's wrong, and you can show us, we'll admit it, that it is an attempt to try. We don't want to wordsmith the reports and get them to you a week after it happened. We'd like you to have the news as fresh as possible, and we give it to you as accurately as we can.
Of those six aircraft, how many eventually made it?
I haven't any ideas. Is it important?
It's a matter of believing what you say. I mean,
okay.
If we don't know what you said on this one issue, what can we believe on the other issues?
I will find out about the aircraft.
Out of the 150 approximate personnel that you've brought in, how many of those are lawyers?
Well, I'm not.
Well, I'd like you to find that out. Every question that I've asked you...
No, I'm going to answer your question. I haven't counted how many lawyers. I was going to estimate there are probably four or five.
Could you check that out and get back to me later?
Certainly.
Sir, where did Baton Rouge go, and what's it going to do with the oil line?
She was going to California. I don't know exactly which location, but it will go into a refinery in California. Is it Long Beach? Does anybody know? The destination of Baton Rouge?
I think it'll probably be heading down toward California.
Well, I was told it was California. I just wasn't told what location. Either the Bay Area or Long Beach would be the likely spots.
I heard that the ship shifted again last night. Can you say if that's true and if that poses any danger to it? And the second question,
fishermen in Cordova and the Cordova Aquaculture Association said they're spending their own money and the city of Cordova appropriated money to buy booms and equipment, and that they're having trouble getting reimbursed by Exxon.
Okay, the first question. Someone came to me this morning and said, I heard a call on the radio, and it said that the Exxon Valdez had now floated off the rocks. I went up to the command center. We called the bridge of the Valdez. They said the ship had not moved. So that's the best answer I have to that. We have not, to my knowledge, and I didn't bring Mr. Marston with me, had a claim from anybody for expenses from this spill to this date. But we have advertised a phone number. If they have spent money, they know who to call. And Mr. Stevens made it very clear last night that the expenses that you incur as a result of this spill are going to be reimbursed by Exxon. Could I take the...
How many tankers do you now have hanging fire waiting to get in here, and what does it cost to keep an empty, fully staffed tanker going for a day?
Do you have any idea how much it costs on a day?
I don't have the accurate count because I simply didn't see the morning report in Anchorage before I left. But I would guess the number is somewhere between 8 to 10, and I have absolutely no idea how much it costs to keep them out there.
Could you even estimate thousands?
No, I have no idea how much it costs.
8,000?
No, I have no idea how much it costs.
How many have gone out since the spill? How much oil
have Well, since out? The spill, we've brought in two tankers have come in daylight hours with two tugs escorting them. The Arco Sag River and the OMI Columbia, and together they took roughly 1,300,000 barrels. And I believe, Chuck, both of them have departed.
No, they're still going to be departing today.
Okay, they'll be going out today. And then the Exxon San Francisco came in, I believe, yesterday to deballast so it could go back out to the Exxon Valdez for the lightering operation.
Mr. Miller, how does this come in to pick up any oil at all during its first response?
The oil that was picked up off the water out at the site in the early days was by Alyeska with the equipment we took out there on Friday. Frankly, the number has, it started and then it has grown, as I think you'd fully expect. So I would have to check back to see exactly how much our equipment picked up. And that equipment is still out there and is being operated by Exxon now, and so that number blends into the total number, whatever it may be, that Exxon has picked up off the water.
It was less than 1,000 before you turned over operational control to Exxon?
I do not know how much it was before we turned it over to Exxon. Chuck, we had people out there operating that equipment till Sunday morning? Sunday afternoon. So exactly when we passed what over to Exxon, I'm not sure. Okay.
Just a second.
If you could clarify the discrepancy, I have two NOAA reports. One was handed out to the press about overflights that Exxon Alyeska took yesterday. The one that was not handed out to the press shows several dead seals were found off of Night Island and another dead seal up off of Glacier. But the one handed out to the press doesn't have that on it. Do you know what the why there's two different reports?
What is the source? What is the source of the reports? NOAA. Okay, they're both NOAA reports? I haven't seen either one of them, but I would appreciate it if I could look at them after this.
I have two questions. One for you first. We've asked repeatedly about the measures being taken to protect the local hire, and I was told that the contractors have been given special air protection gear. I called and spoke with them this morning, and they have neither received the gear nor have they received instruction to provide that to the workers.
I personally gave that instruction, so I can tell you that information is wrong. That's how I learned about organic mist suppressors. It was in the process of giving that order. They have been ordered. They don't have the people doing the kind of work where in the judgment of their industrial hygienist, they are necessary at this point, was what I was told last night before I came to the press conference.
My other question would be for both of Mr. Nelson and yourself. This question has been raised for a very long period of time in Valdez now. Considering the fact that the estimation is made that the oil industry makes approximately $1.15 per barrel profit on the oil brought through the Alyeska terminal, and using your oil industry figures as opposed to other figures, it would cost 2 cents per barrel to put the state-of-the-art ballast water treatment system in rather than the inadequate system that's functioning now. Directly to Alyeska, I guess, but as a parent company, obviously you're involved in that. Why is there so much resistance to that?
Well, first off, I think I should point out that my understanding today was, of course, to talk about the oil spill and where that started.
Contamination.
Yes,
we have a concern about this, too.
The situation we have at the ballast water treatment plant is we think that is operating fine, and we would very much like to sit down with anybody and talk about that and show to them why we think it is operating in a fine fashion. And we would be prepared to do that at a later time. I think these people really...
At the time that the pipeline was approved, it was approved for the present throughput to have 5 ballast water tanks. And there are only 3. And that's sort of a pretty obvious figure.
It is an obvious figure, but I think the permit, if you would look at it very carefully, was an upper limit that what we might eventually need. We found in efficient operation of the facility that we could operate it without 5. But again, that's an issue which I think we should discuss in another forum, and I'll certainly be glad to do that.
Mr. Cornett, could I ask, just 1 second.
And how many miles of shoreline are now contaminated, now fouled?
I don't think anybody has actually tried to calculate how many miles we're spending. Our time, when we leave this press conference, we don't go back and start getting ready for the next press conference and wondering what questions you're going to ask and then running around and getting the answers to that. When we leave here, we go back to work on cleaning up the oil spill. Then we drop that work and come back and tell you what we know.
Isn't part of the work surveying the damage?
Somebody is surveying the damage, and the Department of Environmental Conservation may know how many miles. I do not have that information. I don't know if anyone in our, you don't need to know the number of miles to know that the oil is there and the people are working on it. I just don't have that figure. I promise this gentleman right here.
Sir, could I have the name of the salvage company that is trying to get this vessel off that rock? And do you know it?
I'm not so sure that it is a salvage company. I think it's Exxon Salvage Experts with consultants to Exxon.
I know that there's multiple salvage companies that key on projects such as this, and I was wondering what company that was, and I guess that you're doing it yourself then.
I think we're doing it ourselves with the help of
Experts. Could I also have the name of the underwriters?
I don't have any idea who did it.
Could you get that for me?
Sure.
Mr. Cornett? Can you tell me if this is true? If the tank of Valdez is to spill another large quantity of oil, your immediate response is going to be to use disbursement?
That would be the request that we would make to the government agencies to apply disbursements as if the weather permits.
How long would that take? I mean, would it be hours?
Yes, it would be several hours, because the turnaround time to load 5,500 gallons of disbursement in one of those big airplanes and fly it out there and dump it and come back and load it again is 3 or 4 hours.
I can't understand why you're not ready for that when you have twice as much oil that's already been spilled sitting out there that has the potential.
Well, we have the airplanes and we have the dispersant here now.
Let the state, DEC, know what the chemical component of the dispersant is.
They know what it is. They've approved it. They wouldn't
have...
It was about that long. I don't know what it is. They know what it is.
I understand they don't know what it is.
And
they don't know what the toxicity is until they know what that is.
Then how could they possibly have approved the use of it? How would they approve it? Yeah, I would love to know how they can approve something without knowing what's in it.
Sir, if we were to experience for any reason a furtherance of this spill, do you feel at this time that you have got enough dispersants on hand anywhere in the United States or the United Kingdom currently available to use on that spill? And If not, how much do you think it would take to handle a spill of that size?
Unfortunately, we have a lot of dispersant on hand because we didn't use it on this spill.
I had a rumor last night here and there around the town is that the dispersant is not of essential concern of the Exxon. The essential concern of the Exxon is getting the ship off the rock and getting it dry dock because it costs so much money and get it back in and floating and making more money. What do you have to say about that?
Sounds like a rumor to me.
The Exxon Valdez on schedule, ahead schedule, or behind schedule when it left Valdez terminal left?
Mr. O'Donnell, the superintendent, says it left on time.
It left when it was supposed to?
Yes.
So it would have arrived in, just on Santa Barbara?
No.
So it would have arrived down there on time?
It's going to Long Beach.
I'm sorry, Long Beach. So yes. It would have arrived there on time.
Mr. Cornett, does your company have a policy that would allow any time, obviously not in the past, but possibly in the future, if there should ever be such an ice jam again that they feel they have to cross into the oncoming tanker lane, do you people have a policy or would you instate a policy that would allow that vessel to possibly slow down or even stop for a couple hours that they might let that flow go by?
Well, I am not in the shipping company. That is a question that I am sure Mr. Iorossi, as the president of that company, will examine very carefully.
Thank you.
That's a good point. Yes.
Is the tanker fully boomed right now?
That was the last report that I had, that it was fully boomed, and the people who went out yesterday on the helicopter witnessed that, I believe.
And what does that mean? Does it mean that there's boom all around?
It's sitting in a circle of boom.
Because that's not what I heard, but last night I had people that flew over and it was in a horseshoe, and I don't know if there was boom.
Well, you have to realize when you put a floating boom around the ship in a current, it will string out on one side in a loop, but it lies right against the tanker on the other side unless you're looking very carefully. From a distance that when you're flying over, you know, the boom is going to be very small and it may even have been discolored, but that's the way you get it around there. You put it all the way around and it rides up on whichever side the current is coming from. I certainly do too.
To maybe changing the way things are done as far as checking captains and other members of the crew boarding the vessel for alcohol, such as, I don't know what you could do, I mean, a breathalyzer, if that's what it takes, but I think from those of us in the community who know that the crews often frequent some of the establishments and we see them leave in cabs to go to the terminal, we feel that obviously a much stronger measure needs to be taken to check that.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I think that's on everybody's mind, and I am certain that there will be procedures to address that.
We do have watching the beaches and the rocks.
I'm sorry, sir. Did you repeat?
Do you know yet when crews are going to begin working the beaches and the rocks?
Well, I would just be speculating, and I wouldn't want to get out on that limb again. I've kind of been trying to.
Your statement is at the moment you're concentrating on waters off those affected islands and not going into that.
And in the bays and within the booms where we have oil trapped, we're skimming and we will not start cleaning those areas until we get the free oil off the water. Let me take a question from somebody over here.
Yes. This report this weekend stated that the storm had stirred up the oil and it had congealed to like a peanut butter consistency and the skimmers were not able to skim it up. Could you expand upon this? Is that true or is the skimmers presently picking up fresh oil? What are the skimmers doing exactly?
We're attacking the fresh oil and this mousse that you're referring to. There, different skimmers work in different ways. If you're using a belt skimmer that's driven by a boat, you can pick up sticks or anything else, so you can pick that mousse up with a belt skimmer. But you can't throw one of those fresh oil skimmers in there that depends on gravity pulling the oil over the lip and down into it. So you have to apply the right skimmer to the right oil.
How many of each type do you have out working now?
We have 10 to 12 working all the time, and I don't have... We have the two different types. I don't know what the numbers are of the two different types.
Mr. Nelson. It seems as if everybody from the governor on down has criticized Alyeska for violating the contingency plan, which requires a five-hour response, and has said that Alyeska fell down when it came to carrying out the contingency plan. In addition, there have been some statements by environmental groups and others that Alyeska would not be able to carry out the contingency plan today if there were a spill anywhere along the pipeline, Prudhoe Bay or Valdez, because so much equipment is dispatched to Prince William Sound. Could you comment on both the governor's criticism and whether or not Alyeska is prepared today to carry out the contingency plan?
Yes, certainly. I have not, I have to admit, heard the government, the governor's press conference directly, but essentially it's been reported to me that yes, there is a considerable amount of criticism to our initial response. And I think we have commented on that. Chuck was at a press conference, I believe, on yesterday and then on Saturday. But to run through it again very briefly, we got the call at 12:30, roughly, from the Coast Guard. The first thing we did is send out our rescue tug. It got out there about 2 hours later. Keep in mind the site is about 25 miles outside the terminal, as you well know. We have two other tugs. The second tug, we were getting ready to go. The Coast Guard called up, said, let's put the lightering equipment on it. So we put the lightering equipment we had on it, and off it went. Then the third tug was to pull the barge up, did pull the barge up. That barge, it's been reported, had been unloaded because it had been previously damaged. The equipment to go on it was sitting right on the dock for the most part. We loaded that up, took that equipment out to the site. So it got out there about 8 to 9 hours later than we would like to have it get out there, and I think that's been the number reported. The question is, and the key question really is, what would be the effect of that? And let me put it this way. If we had gotten out there in the five hours in the oil spill plan, if you read it very carefully and read the general provisions, the oil spill plan is a guideline, okay? And I think it quite clearly says in a number of different places, again in the general portion, that the plan becomes flexible based on the circumstances, based on the real-time information you're getting from the site. But let's say we could have gotten out there 9 hours earlier than we did. What I'm trying to say, in a way, that the 5 hours was somewhat impractical considering the real-time information we were getting from the site. For example, one of the first reports we had from the Coast Guard, and that's why we sent the rescue tug out there, was, hey, send your rescue tug out there to assist. We don't know if he's on the rocks, how hard he is on the rocks, and what kind of assistance he needs. But back to the 8 to 9 hours, how much can we skim with the equipment we have? And it is the equipment spelled out in that scenario for a large spill in Prince William Sound. Very optimistically, and this, I'll give you a number, very optimistic, what we can skim might be 250 to 300 barrels an hour. And that means everything has to be working, and it was working when we got out there, but you also have to have unloading equipment handy. You got to rig it all up, you suck it up, you come over and you dump your load. So the 8 to 9 hours that we were delayed in getting out there, at the most, 9 times 300, 2,700 barrels. And I think you can see the 2,700 barrels is a little bit unrealistic on the high side based on, in fact, what we were able, what anybody was unable to pick up. So that's how that comes out. We followed the oil spill plan. Again, it is a guideline. Those plans were reviewed by the ADEC back when they were submitted in 1987, and they were approved. And I think the DEC recognizes what's in there. The 200,000 barrel spill, the plan clearly says is a catastrophe. There's no question about that. And there is no suggestion that we don't understand why people in this state, in Prince William Sound, Cordova, are vitally concerned about the whole thing. But the response to a 200,000 barrel spill is very clear in the contingency plan, and it is dispersants. And it's dispersants applied in a timely manner. Also, the use of in situ burning, excuse me if I don't say that right, and that was tried to some extent, as you well know, and Don can fill you in. and then the exclusion by booms of the sensitive areas, and those things were done. We think we followed the oil spill contingency plan. We think our people over at the terminal did a heck of a job. Let me comment also a little brief, hopefully more brief than that, on the turnover to Exxon. Somebody might ask, when did the turnover take place? Well, it started about 1:30 Friday morning with my call to Frank Iorossi, as I think he's commented on. At that particular time, we did just what the oil spill plan called for, notifying not only all the owners, contacting CIRO, Alaska Clean Seas, contacting the people who have the planes and the equipment to spread dispersants, contacting, for example, Al Allen, our dispersant expert, to come over, and he was over here that morning, Chuck, I believe about 7 or 8 o'clock, talking to the Coast Guard, filling out the papers, the request to use dispersants, for example, communication with Exxon back in Houston while Mr. Iorossi was in the air, so that when he showed up Friday afternoon, I believe it was, Don, here it was, and then the transition proceeds from there till we get to the final turnover, which probably took place sometime Sunday. Again, depending on whether you were purchasing or contracting or helping with communication, or actually until Sunday morning till we had people out on the water operating the skimming equipment, that was the turnover. Now, in response to your second question, yes, we do believe we have the oil spill contingency equipment to operate the system. Some from the pump station, it's reported to me, that for the most part was not used and is well on its way back to the pump stations. And I don't frankly know what came from what pump station, but that's well on back. In regard to the operation of the terminal, when the Coast Guard made the decision to bring in the first vessel, the Arco Sag River, our people met, discussed it with the Coast Guard and the DEC, said, here's what we have over at the terminal. We have the boom, so we could boom the berths and the tankers, and we have the following oil spill cleanup equipment, and named that, and they said that's fine. So the Arco Sag River came in on Tuesday, I believe, and we have been operating since then.
Can you clarify, I'm a little confused. Does Alyeska have its own dispersant capability? Were the dispersants that were used, were attempted to be used on Sunday, were they the same dispersants that would have been used had Alyeska gotten a go-ahead to use dispersants on Friday morning?
Well, Don can comment on this, but the dispersants we were ordering were the same dispersants that they would have used, I think.
Same coordinated.
Yes.
So at what time could you have, if you had gotten the go-ahead from the Coast Guard Friday morning to use dispersants, when could you have started using them?
Don, do you want to?
Let me back up just a little. We've sort of danced all around this in the past two or three days. We have expressed real concern about the timeliness of the application of the dispersants. We got permission to put dispersants on Sunday night at 6:45.
Yeah.
And thought, well, we will put the dispersants out Monday. We had the big storm Sunday night, so we never really got to apply them in any quantity.
I wanted to know, I understand that Alyeska contacted the Coast Guard and asked them to use dispersants early Friday morning. At what time could they have been actually used if the permission had been given?
Okay, I didn't understand your question. As soon as the first plane that can spray, that has the nozzles on it, would have arrived here.
Which would have been when?
I have to check. I don't remember. Maybe somebody else.
I think that's a real interesting question, because there is a lot of dancing around about the timing of the use of the dispersants and the approval for the use of the dispersants. And if it's a matter of, okay, do it, and you can run out and do it, or if it's a matter of, okay, do it, and you need 2 days for the plane to arrive, those are very different scenarios.
Sunday we were in position to do it, and we waited on permission most of the day Sunday. We got permission after a long meeting on Sunday night at 6:45,
So would it be fair to say that permission granted on Friday to use dispersants would have resulted in spraying of dispersants Sunday morning?
That's Exxon's position, yes. I'd like to comment. The reason I didn't get your whole question there, I was going to comment on the fact that you may have missed one significant point in the fact that Alyeska, the Prince William Sound contingency plan provides for Alyeska to make this response and presumes that the owner of the ship or the owner of the oil or someone is going to step up and take responsibility and replace Alyeska.
The plan actually says that Alyeska will take full responsibility until relief by a government agency.
Well, the reality is the owner, the person who takes responsibility in this case is the owner of the ship.
Unless I'm misunderstanding it, or there's another explanation further on in the plan.
Well, let me try your question. It's my understanding that the plan does not specifically talk about turning it over.
I have the plan.
Yeah, I know, and I have it too. I'm telling you the plan does not specifically say who you turn it over to. Where that comes from is under, I believe, the Clean Water Act, which specifies that the spiller is responsible for cleaning up the spill. And what Exxon had indicated to Alyeska over the years privately was that when one of their tankers had a spill, they would come a-running, and that's exactly what they did, and that we would start the coordination of all the resources needed from around the country and from around Alaska, around the world, literally. We would start that as soon as the spill took place, and that's what was done. But that's the way it works in Exxon's case.
Mr. Nelson, you say that your company responded effectively to the original contingency plan. Whether or not that's true or not is moot. What I'm asking you now is the fact that that response wasn't too effective, does that mean that the initial plan was extremely flawed? Would you admit that now?
I'm not sure what you mean by the initial plan. Are you talking about
contingency plan?
Oh, you're talking about the the contingency plan was approved by the ADC in 19.
That's not what I asked you. I asked you whether you believe that it was flawed, whether it was passed.
I'm getting to it. Give me a chance. The plan approved in 1987 called for the use of dispersants. What I'm telling you is I do not believe the plan is flawed. Okay? What the plan requires is the use of dispersants and the prompt use of dispersants. And so I'm not trying to speak for Exxon. I think Exxon is doing just a heck of a job in responding to this spill. Okay? But the way to clean it up is our planned envision, and the DEC, I think, is aware of this, was the use of dispersants burning.
Well done.
What I meant a while ago when I said we had danced around this, we had discussed this to the point where in one previous press conference I said that I was not going to get into finger pointing. I'm sure there are going to be hearings all over the place on this, and we will know the answer to that. Speaking of that, I need to ask...
Mr. Cornett, you don't have to raise your finger to point.
Beg your pardon?
You don't have to raise your finger to point. You've already pointed in the record.
I have stated a fact that we got permission on Sunday night at 6:45. That is a fact.
And the only person you needed permission from, or the only agency, was the DEC?
No, we needed permission from the Coast Guard. Now, I'm not going to get into this. There's going to be a National Transportation Safety Board briefing here at 12 o'clock, and we will be back at 6 o'clock this evening.
Mr. Cornett, I have a quick question. What's the status of a cleanup station for the working boats that are coming back to the harbor that are just covered with oil? They can be cited by the Coast Guard for doing that, and I was under the understanding that a cleanup station was going to be provided for them out there.
I'll have to check into it. That's the first I've heard of that.
Well, it should be, because there's some boats down there that are very pathetic. And they're liable for the oil being on the hulls of their boats.
Well, let me take your question and see what the answer is. I don't know where it is.
Cornett, what do you
Thank you.
Don Cornett has ended the Exxon press conference. After this conference began, we received notice from a Coast Guard spokesman that the NTSB is holding a press conference that should be starting almost immediately. The National Transportation Safety Board, again, is conducting the investigation of the grounding that actually occurred. Again, we have been told that the NTSB briefing will begin in just a moment. This meeting was unscheduled and unannounced previously. We got the word during this press conference and were unable to get the word down the line earlier. We will continue broadcasting and we will carry the NTSB press briefing as soon as it does get underway. We've just been listening to a broadcast of the Exxon morning briefing, this one attended by Don Cornett of Exxon out of the Anchorage office, and George Nelson, who is the president.